there's then another lady in their 80s and 90s would prepare food, sandwiches and fast food. And then they packaged it up and went around and offered food to homeless people on the streets. They had a little cart, and they knew some of these people quite well. They knew what they liked, and they made ham sandwiches and cheese sandwiches and gave each homeless person, or showed them what was in the back, and pulled out what they thought they liked from doing this again and again. It was so touching. They, of their own kind intention, did this. They teamed up, and there's a little film of them making the sandwiches and preparing the sandwiches and putting them in a little cart and going down the sidewalk handing things to the homeless people. So, no matter how old we are, there are ways of practicing kindness and finding ways to help others, even if we don't feel like we're that strong or that useful. But these women in their 80s, 90s were strong and useful of their own initiative. So we have to take really good care of the mind and not put conditions on it that are based on egoic delusion, which is very powerful. Whatever the mind is playing, there are a lot of conditioned recordings in the mind, and whatever the mind is playing, we're listening to that, whether we realize it or not. The other danger, of course, is that we listen to it over and over and over again, because it's so strongly conditioned in us, and we're not aware of the damage that that kind of listening can do, because it reinforces fear, worry, weakness, especially the fear of death or the fear of disability or the fear of being old or the fear of not being liked. There's so much fear that we can wrap ourselves around in, and then we become embalmed. And that's not a balmy state. That's embalmed is you're like a corpse. You're dead, not alive. So while we're alive, it's good to really be alive and to observe how our thinking pulls us down. It can easily destroy the strength, the verve, the courage, the power to overcome defilements. Well, that would require a lot of awareness right there. If we're aware of defilement, like if you had a scorpion walking up your leg, what would you do? You'd brush it off. You'd quite nicely try to remove it from your body. Well, the mind is full of scorpions, and we have to be very, very mindful when the tail of the scorpion bites, sticks into the mind, and pulls out all the power of contemplation and awareness. It pulls us into really horrific mind states like fear, cowardice, self-preoccupation, me and mine. I'm so great or I'm terrible. A lot of self-preoccupation. And then you see the video of these two elderly ladies feeding people on the street, preparing these beautiful sandwiches and treats, and going around feeding homeless people In their 80s and 90s, they're doing this. Here we are, able-bodied. We have good functioning bodies. But when the mind isn't functioning well, even a healthy human being can be disabled. Disabled means not capable of empowering what we have a strength to do, to help, to reach out, to practice, not just for our own benefit, but for others. There's so much joy in it. We have a special life here in the monastery. We're recipients of other people's extraordinary kindness. And we have to be careful not to practice entitlement. That means that we not expect. We wait for and expect others to practice extraordinary kindness to us. No, that would not be a wholesome way of living here. But it gives us the opportunity to practice extraordinary gratitude and humility. Why are people leaning over backwards to help us? Because we are renunciants. But the renunciation that is greater than all the giving up of eating what you like or wearing what you might want to wear, not wearing these kind of wraparound cloths, or to just do what you want, eat what you want, when you want. It's all about the you, the me, the I, having it our way. But this kind of restraint and focus is very healthy. The renunciation is so healthy, done in the right way. It really frees us to focus on the essence of life, on the essential points, and not get distracted in all the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, feelings that the world has to offer. Whole bunch of distraction that takes us away from discovering who we really are. What are we? Then you ask that question and people right away will of course say, well, I'm a Canadian, or I'm from Bangladesh. I'm 70, or I'm 40. Or I'm 15. Is that what we are? Is that who we are? But who we are really doesn't get old, doesn't get sick. It's not confined to this physical body. If that's who we really are, then it's quite a pathetic life, isn't it? What's the whole meaning of it, if that's what we are? So we can contemplate this consciousness, this awareness that is always there. Whether we're 5 or 50 or 90, this consciousness seems to hang out. It's always there. What is that? Is that just me? Don't we all share that? When we're absolutely silent and we plug into that conscious awareness, it's like an electrical field. When you plug in an appliance into this electrical field that runs through the building, it runs through the earth. It's like an elemental field. And we are also plugged into elemental fields. And this consciousness is indescribable, and yet it's pervasive. It's infinite. It's not something that you can package and possess. And that is a beauty, that it's universal, it's for everyone. This conscious awareness, we plug into it as soon as we take the human form. As a baby, we open our eyes and yell at the doctor, "I'm back." This consciousness is able to express itself in form. It's quite astonishing. So we have a special privilege as humans, because not only are we conscious, but we have awareness of that. We have an ability to reflect on that, which animals, little creatures, don't. They don't, and therefore we can take care of each other and creatures and environments, conditions. We take care of them. But perhaps the most specialized taking care of is this reflexive care. To care for consciousness itself. How can we care for consciousness? We can purify the vehicle, the vessel, where it's perched and how it's expressed, and how we share that gift of being conscious, how we share it, how we express it, how we manifest it, how we live it. This is a grave and enormous responsibility. And the gift of the Dhamma is like a basket, a containment for this consciousness, which enables the most beneficial expression of it, the most exalted expression of it, which is the Dhamma itself. To know, see, feel, speak, manifest Dhamma in our life for our own benefit, for the benefit of all. Rare indeed is it awareness of that, awareness of that Dhamma. Is Dhamma itself not to be neglected, not to be kidnapped or hoodwinked by delusion, by self-obsession, by distraction. We practice for that, to be able to abide in this pure consciousness and manifest that without ego, without self preoccupation, aggrandizement, or defilement of any kind. We tend to swing from I'm no good to I'm great. But to stay in the middle is very utilitarian for sharing this quality of reflective consciousness and abiding in it fully for the benefit of each other, ourselves and each other. Otherwise, we get distracted in the self. Self, I want, I don't want. Or the defilements, the impurities. We have the power again, the power to contemplate defilement. A rarity in this world, a purity to hold up, to embody, not to embalm, to embody, to bring forth, and to wake up to. Such a gift we have. We're not able to fully embody that, but we're working on it. Of course, the trickiest part is to self-reflect, to look in the mirror and see, oh, look what I've said, look what has been enacted through this body-mind. Not so good. We pick ourselves up and try again. That takes care. It takes conscientiousness. And the Buddha said, mindfulness is the path to the deathless, where the ego is embalmed, but that pure consciousness is brought to full present moment awareness. The more we abide in that, the greater the joy, the greater the peace, the greater the awakening. We can wake up a little bit, but then we crawl back into deluded states. The less we fall back into those delusions, the deeper the awakening. It's like a deep sea diver. Once you are fully in the ocean, you know what that is. You never doubt that. You may have to come ashore sometimes to do your work, but you know what it is to be immersed in the ocean of the Dhamma.